Aloha, and welcome to the Inside Out Show, an hour of fun, friendly, heartfelt, provocative conversation, exploring solutions to relationship challenges, to snuggle up and break free from fears, doubts, and insecurities, for you to live with more joy, passion, love, and success. I'm your host, Carrie Valentine. Now, on to an inspiring, juicy show. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio. We are heard on the FM dial at 90.9 in the North Shore, 91.9 island-wide, 92.7 in Moloa'a, and 88.9 in Oahu. We are streaming live at kkcr.org. It is wonderful to have you listening to the show tonight. Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it. I'm the host, Carrie Valentine, of the Inside Out Show, and tonight's show will be discussing emotional wellness. As October is Emotional Wellness Month, and my special guest coming up shortly, who will be discussing tips and tools and ways to improve your emotional wellness and keep it strong, is Kavika Matos, who lives on Maui, and is the program supervisor for Maui Family Support Services, as well as he runs the Kane Connections program. And to discuss emotional wellness, you know, many people are reluctant to use mental health services because of the stigma of having an emotional problem. Society has a tendency to view mental health issues differently from medical ones. When someone breaks a leg, has chest pains, or needs to get a prescription, they see a doctor. However, when they experience depression, excessive fears, or a problem with alcohol, they may be embarrassed to seek out help. Many people view these conditions as weaknesses, and they should handle them themselves. Unfortunately, this view prevents them from getting professional assistance that may alleviate their problem. So to recognize an emotional problem and receive help is not at all a sign of weakness. Actually, these are positive actions and characteristics of strong individuals. So I suggest checking out your company's Employee Assistance Program, or EAP, if you are self-employed, or even if you your employee assistance program isn't the right way for you to seek out that assistance, you know, check out a therapist or a coach, or go to a mental health clinic if, you know, that's something that you feel strongly you need to do. And if you're a student and going to school, check out the counseling center. All of these cases are completely confidential and really, really helpful to begin the ball rolling in the right direction. These are some really quick tools and action steps to seek out and get the assistance that you're looking for. As I said, Kavika Matos will be on the show coming up shortly, and please stay tuned. It's going to be a very riveting conversation about how folks can get assistance and things to look for challenges, as well as kind of ways to keep your emotional wellness strong. So that being said, let's kick off the show with a powerful song by Andra Day, Rise Up.
You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Move mountains. We gon' walk it out and move mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. I'll rise up, I'll rise unafraid. I'll rise up, and I'll do it a thousand times again. And I'll rise up, I like the waves. I rise up in spite of the The silence is a quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we'll take the world to its feet. Move, I won't dance, bring it to its feet. Move, I won't dance. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. I'll rise up, I'll rise unafraid. I'll rise up, and I'll do it a thousand times again. For you, for you, for you, for you. For that we have each other. I will rise a thousand times again, and we'll rise up. I like the waves. We'll rise up in spite of the ache. We'll rise up, and we'll do it a thousand times again. You.
And that was Andra Day and her song, Rise Up. I am very excited to welcome our guest for this show, Kavika Matos, who is a program supervisor for Kane Connections program on Maui. And I am thrilled to talk with him about things that he's doing, plus kind of how we can help during Emotional Wellness Month of October, ideas and tools and tips to help folks, and not just adults, but Kavika works with children too, and families, and I'm very, very interested and excited to get his wealth of knowledge and wisdom to help us all out. So aloha and welcome, Kavika, to the show.
Thank you so much, Gary. Looking forward to this time with us, talking and being together.
My joy, my joy. So, Kavika, our audience is always very inquisitive about the guests that are coming on the show and are interested to know a little bit of background before we get into the meat of the conversation. So I would wonder if you wouldn't mind to share a little bit about your upbringing, where you came, you know, where you grew up and kind of things like that.
Well, currently I live on Maui. And I've been here since 1984 after graduating from high school in 1980. But I'm originally from the island, the Big Island, or the island they actually call the Hawaii Island, on the east side of the island, the town of Hilo. I grew up, I thought we were rich in many ways, but I grew up as the middle child of a family of five kids. Next to my grandparents' house, my dad had nine siblings, and each of them had at least five to seven kids. And so I grew up with a lot of children, a lot of kids, cousins, first cousins around us all the time. And when we were growing up, my dad's family was relatively close, and they got together a lot. And so that was the environment. My mom came from the countryside, and we often went out there as well. So I was definitely rich with family. I was a backyard kid. You know, most recently today, or in the recent years, since being in the human services field, I learned about ACEs, you know, and the impact on that and resilience. And, you know, back then, we didn't know anything different with the physical and mental abuse and other things, being poor, seeing addiction and alcoholism and incarceration around us. I just kind of thought things were normal. I was a backyard kid. I wasn't into sports. That wasn't our family's thing. We were expected to go to school, come home, and we had chores, and I loved animals. So I was a backyard kid raising animals all the way through high school. That was kind of my life. And rivers were our swimming pools. I don't remember as a child swimming in actual swimming pools. As a little child, cousins holding their hands, we'd go up to swim in some of the main rivers that flow through Hilo Town. Walking, you know, half a mile, three quarter ways there, and life was simple, life was good. And there are many, many great things, good memories that I have, along with some things that helped me become the man I am today through those challenges and recognizing those things and healing from things that have also happened in the past.
Yeah, thank you, Kavika, for sure to share that. You mentioned ACEs, and I imagine you're referring to adverse childhood experiences. Is that accurate?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, so some of the folks listening in may not know of that kind of term, which is actually really important term and study and understanding of how our childhood emotional experiences really affect us, not only emotionally, but physically in our adult life. And right. A lot of ailments, physical ailments that are life-threatening, actually studies have shown lead back to these emotional challenges that have affected us as a child. So that being said, I was curious, did, you know, certain experiences or certain environment that you were experiencing as a child kind of lead you into becoming, such a care provider for so many people over there all these years?
Yes. First, I don't know when it actually started to happen, but I realized that I've been on this quest and this desire to help people probably from a really young age as a child. It was my innate personality. It was my innate desire. It was values that was also taught to us to be helpful. However, I think it really was much deeper than I even realized or imagined until my later years. Because as an adult, I always did, or I felt best, I felt my best and really loved helping people, and eventually got into human services, kind of stumbled into it through crisis. But one of the realizations that came to me was, you know, in high school at the end of the year, now we were poor, we grew up poor. So even in high school, I was still wearing basically hand-me-downs or buying clothes from cheap stores, for example. We grew up that way. We grew up on hand-me-downs. Every once in a while, we might have gotten something really expensive, and that was a big deal. But we always look forward, for example, to this one particular family that I have in my childhood memories, who used to drop off their used clothes, and it was like Christmas for us. My dad was a maintenance guy at the hospital in Hilo, and you know, back then you could rummage through the landfills. And so when he would come home, or in particular when he knew he should be working, but he dropped off, he was coming home with the truck, we know he found something that was might have been broken, somebody else's trash. Trash became our treasure, rather it was bike parts or whatever, and then there we were able to put a bike together until eventually they could afford getting us some new bikes. So that was the way that I grew up. And going back to high school, I remember most recently I saw, you know, class reunion times when it becomes a focus. I've gone back to try to find my yearbooks and finding them. You know, we want to remember people's names and so forth, right? Instead of going to a reunion and forgetting, especially your good friends' names from the past. But I opened up my yearbook, and something that I cut out and pasted was our last senior year class newsletter. And we had that voting, you can vote for best dress or the best artist and so forth. Something that I forgot, didn't realize for many years, and I cut it out and pasted it into my senior class yearbook, was that I was voted for a class of almost 400 students as the most helpful student. And so I cut that piece out of the newsletter, posted it in my yearbook, as I said, and also wrote a poem. I didn't realize that I had the skills to write either, because I was really bad with English. But, you know, so looking back and then coming to the realization as an adult some 20 years ago, like, wow, I was already on this path. That's no wonder it fills me and is so important. And so then starting to assess why, always the self-discovery of why. Why does it fill me? Why is this so crucial? You know, has been a journey. A journey of growth with knowledge, but also a journey of healing. It's important to heal, to get through, to help, especially in those times when, you know, as I'm at my lowest with mental health and emotional health, and needed to push forward.
That is beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. You know, it sounding such a, your innate quality of being of service, of being of help to others.
And we all can, you know, do that.
Thank
right?
you.
Gary, we all can be there, whatever level.
Yes.
That thrive on that and need to do it. There are those that just might be, you know, willing to help by opening up somebody's door or helping them carry something. But whatever that is, we can bring value to each other. And for me, it's a need. I realize it's a need to help people.
Yes. And what a beautiful opportunity as we're having this conversation, that October is Emotional Wellness Month. And this is our conversation today will kind of be around tools and situations that people are challenged with in the regular everyday life. And now on top of this, we're dealing with this global pandemic too. So I'm curious to, ask you some questions of what you're experiencing in the field and thoughts of ways to help people. That being said, you are the program supervisor for Kane Connections program on Maui, and wondered, just curious to, you know, to share a little bit about what that program is about and what kind of, what's been one of the highlights that you've had working with this program.
Before I answer that too, kind of as a reference for, I've been involved with Maui Family Support Services for 5 years, took over the program a year after I started. So it's been 4 years now. But prior to that, I was trying to help people through different means. At one point, I was involved with the financial services business and really focused on thriving, helping people while trying to thrive financially myself. As I said, to try and change the destiny of my family, my wife, my kids, and our destiny and family and friends around us. But back when I was 32, everything fell apart. I had to file bankruptcy. I had to close my business. Things happened that was unimaginable for me. And it was the first time that I actually contemplated suicide. It was a difficult time. I was shot. My mental and emotional health and the idea of being judged, you know, so many things attached to that, feeling defeated, all the emotions, the insecurities of growing up and hearing and seeing things, all those things combined in that moment of weakness just made me feel like, wow, I cannot get through this. And but through an experience of my nephew a few years prior, who did commit suicide and succeeded, he hung himself, I remember the pain that he put our family through. So, you know, part of my motivation, for example, was to, my thought process, unhealthy, but my thought process was, hey, if, you know, I still am hanging on to, because of financial devastation, things are falling apart, but I still have my insurance policy. So as crazy as it sounds, if I choose to end this, it would mean a benefit financially towards my wife and my kids. It's crazy, but that's the truth. So hanging on to faith and a little bit of hope, I stumbled into running a group home, working for a group home, real part-time, minimum wage. And a month later, I was running the program based upon my people skills and my ability to communicate and all of the experiences and knowledge I had prior. So that became the path for 20 plus years. So with that said, that's what I've been doing, working with kids, which is really my passion. And then again, unexpectedly working for a national organization locally here on Maui. I wasn't part of the plan when there was a leadership change. And I saw it coming. I was experienced enough to know what was going to happen. And sure enough, months later, they basically got me out. And that was traumatic. Again, I fell into a major depression because I had been with this organization for 10 years. It was my identity. It was my identity within the community. So that's not knowing again what I was going to do next. I kept the faith, kept the hope, and stumbled on a real part-time scale into Maui Family Support Services. And I thought, man, one thing I didn't want to do was to teach adults, because I love kids. Kids are the light. You give them, they just give freely, honestly. But I knew from my prior experiences with finances and different things I did, you know, adults was much harder. But I think the path was already written. And so then, yeah, 5 years ago, I started part-time, became full-time very quickly, a month later, and then a year later, due to funding cuts and stuff, my supervisor decided to step away, and I was offered the position. And then it's just been an awesome, awesome whirlwind, you know, since then. So did I answer your question?
Well, I was good. You are. I just want to dial in a little bit closer as to what the men that you work with, like, okay, what's their situations and how do they get part of, you know, to be part of this kind of Connections program?
Yeah, initially, because our niche in the community under our nonprofit agency is Early Head Start. That's one of the major programs that we do. County Connections, formerly called FIT for many, many years, was really a program that focused on servicing trying to get the fathers involved with children of that early childhood age, the newborns, the three-year-olds. We have center-based, home-based people and so forth. And but at that time, just by timing, the agency kind of stretched a little bit and wrote a grant to work at a treatment center. Locally here, it's called Aloha House Residential Treatment. It's a huge agency with lots of programs. And so I was given that group to go work with the men who went into treatment, either forced through to probation, parole, you know, just their own choice, trying to heal through or get through their addiction. And so I came in on the beginning of the second year of a three-year grant, and then I realized that especially those men, and within this captive audience setting, going up there every week for a couple of hours, I started to see healing and addiction from a different light. And so I started to bring to them my life experience and things that I've done while also working with the kids. And I realized that things that I created or things that I did and learned through my own life and also with the experience of the kids, was actually working for men as well. And they were very open to it. So, yeah, it's been 5 years since I've gone to the treatment center, initially under the grant, but now working with the men. Then I got hired by them once our grant ended. I got hired by Aloha House, and so it's been 5 years. And, you know, I just feel like everybody needs hope. And there is addiction. I'm glad the medical field deems addiction and alcoholism as a disease, especially to get funding to help people, unlike the past. But, you know, I believe that people are good people. They're good in almost everybody. 99% of the humans out there, there's really, there's goodness, but somewhere along the line, people lose their way. And when there's substance that is placed in their body and it alters not only the physical body, but their mental health and emotional health, it just compounds. And they do things that, you know, like stealing and hurting other people, that if they're clean and sober and healthy and supported, I've seen the major changes. So witnessing those things, I have this really big belief that people can heal when and if they're ready. That's true. They've got to be willing to change. But when they are, to ensure that, you know, at least one person, but that, you know, multiple people and systems are there to support them through the through their comeback.
Yes.
That's my thought.
That is an awesome journey of hope, you know, what you're sharing with, you know, particularly what we've been focusing on the last few minutes about men who have, you know, emotional challenges or dealing with alcoholism or, you know, dealing with, you know, kind of maybe kind of civil challenges that have been going on in their life, and seeing what I'm hearing, and not necessarily the word that you use, but it's a word that I love, is choice. You know, that no matter how bad things are, you can choose to begin to shift. And, you know, and your story yourself and helping so many others is really important for people to hear today, that it begins with that choice and that desire for to shift and transform what's going on, no matter how bad they feel, no matter how lonely they might feel or feel like they're the only one.
Absolutely.
So we're going to get back to some interesting tools here in a second, but I just wanted to share, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio, and we are streaming live at kkcr.org. I'm the host of the show, Carrie Valentine, and I'm very, very honored and excited as Kavika and I are having this conversation. I'm talking with Kavika Matos, who is the program supervisor for Kane Connections program on Maui, and Kavika's experience has not only been with adults, but with children and with foster parenting and dealing with kind of, you know, challenges of early childhood rearing and with the family. So with that, Kavika, I wanted to ask you, let's say you meet someone up on the street or whatever, because this is Emotional Wellness Month, October, and I'd love to share with people like some quick tips and tools for, let's say you just, you know, you meet someone out on the street. They know who you are, whether, you know, they know you're some sort of assistance to the community, and you meet a gentleman or a woman in that case, and, you know, you start having a conversation and they reveal to you, you know, that they're in some suffering emotionally and are a lot of pain and distress right now. And they may or may not say exactly to you, hey, Kavika, what are some things you could say to help me? But in your hearing of their voice and in their discussion with you, you know that they're really asking for some help. What would be some simple, like, top one or two or three tips to get them, like, on a path of transformation?
You know, I think the way that I come across, the first, I believe this, because I believe that back when, I try to relate to when I was at my lowest points, or, and it doesn't have to be at that level, but just kind of in general, I learned this many years ago, that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Again, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I remember, for me personally too, if I didn't feel like this person cared, I just, you know, I would shut down and my guard would be up. But once people show their true side, their true heart and their intent, in those times of highest need, then I would open up myself to them. The person's a funny thing, right? And it makes us also do things, just like if we were taking substance, it makes us behave and do things that maybe we wouldn't do otherwise. So when I approach someone, I try to come from that angle. Listening is another super important thing, because I think today, especially, the more we know, the more we come across as a know-it-all. And again, in people in need, they don't want necessarily somebody telling them what to do. They just want warmth around them and understanding. So listening is also a very important thing. And then knowing what our resources are for them, like educating ourselves and knowing in the field that I'm working with, it's important to know what's out there and what is available, and not giving someone false hope, especially when they, you know, they become open to that and they feel heard. And then if I give them misinformation, or if I don't follow up, for example, that's another factor that I see in this field, this human services field, that, you know, is some of the issues that participants or clients or, you know, the people that we serve, emotional, they tell me these things, you know, because they, when that repeatedly happens, especially if they're in this cycle or within the system, then, you know, there's a great chance that if we're not doing the best that we can, they're going to experience negativity and then start to develop their own beliefs. We are only what we know and experience, right? We are what we know, which comes from what we learn and experience. So I want to try to give them new experiences and new knowledge, or reinforce what they already know. So, and support them. And so that's kind of my three tips, I think.
All right. Awesome. I want to shift the focus here for a second, do a little pivot and bring some focus to children, which are close to your heart as well, outside of working what you do with men. And in your observations, like, what do you see as signs when you're observing children that are experiencing mental health challenges that, you know, again, maybe they are not even aware of it. They may or be expressing it or not, but some certain patterns or things that you see, like, again, like just some simple one or two ideas that people that are parents or teachers in the community or foster parents, for that matter, can pay attention and give them some healthy tips to be aware of if kids are acting in this particular manner. You know, they may be signs of that they're feeling some deeper emotions that are unsettling in their body.
You know, one quote that I saw recently on a Facebook post, and I remind our parents that I work with to do parenting class with under Connie Connections, kind of went out off of a, you know, on a tangent about the substance abuse treatment center, that experience. But ultimately what I was going to share was that it feeds into my main program, since I've been doing it consistently. And these are especially the men that become open because they develop this relationship with me while I'm in treatment, 6 to 8 weeks, and they see the consistency and they get that I don't judge them and there's knowledge. So anyway, moving that forward, what I tell the men, and also I do parenting classes as well, is that we cannot raise our children the way we were raised, because the world that we were raised in is a different world. Keep the good stuff that you and I remember as children. Those are positive things, the value of family and connection and support and all those things that come with resilience. But one that we got to keep learning. We got to keep growing and keep doing things different. It's just a different time. So when I work with kids, I would often watch. Well, first off, by my own self-development, I began to realize, and I do with every participant that comes with me, whether in treatment or a part of our bigger program, and other organizations that I'm just volunteering and involved with, I try to do the three personality tests, the colors, the four different colors, introvert to extrovert test is a second, and then the third test is the love language. I've implemented that right at the get-go when I bring on new people, because I want to know, it helped me understand that not everybody has the same personality. Therefore, their actions are going to be different. And so because I became good at understanding and identifying what the different personalities are, even applying to kids like adults, you know, somebody who's quiet, like an adult, you might say, oh, that person's having problems, or if that person's isolating, but it may just be that they're more introverted. Introverts, for example, are more quiet and reserved. And if asked, especially in a large group, you don't put an introvert, a true introvert, in a large group and ask them to talk on the spot. They need time to process. On the other hand, it's good to know who are really the extroverts, because they want to talk, regardless of what comes out of their mouth, regardless of what they say, sometimes putting their foot in the mouth, but the way that they function is outgoing, and they want attention. So understanding that personalities are different is super important. So when I apply that to kids, with kids especially, because unlike adults or most adults, kids oftentimes don't have choice of the life and experiences that they're living through. And so when I would see a kid isolating, kind of teenager years, you know that one of the common things is they're trying to separate and become independent of their parents. But for kids that are younger than that, kids need connections. They need support. They need that. And that's part of why today, through the Child Welfare Service, now they're more than ever that I've seen, they're finally looking at trying to get kids, trying to keep kids in a home, regardless of what their experience, hopefully not too horrific, but what their experience is, because that connection, when that connection is broken, regardless of how we deem abusive and so forth, it's just not healthy. So it's better to get the family healthy, especially when the goal is to put the kids back in with the family. Then we got to help the family grow and come to the realization, you know, these things that maybe it's just their own experience. Again, we only know what we've learned and experienced. So isolation, watching a kid isolate, that's one challenge. In Hawaii, people were very touchy, huggy, not just a love language, but we're actually, you know, we still hang on to that part of aloha. And part of it is physical touch and the hugs and the honi, what we call honi, the kiss on the cheek when you greet an elder or even each other. And, you know, I understanding that when a kid feels uncomfortable consistently with just physical touch, that could be a sign that, hey, maybe there's something going on. Maybe there's some, not really physical, but could be sexual abuse going on. So being in tune, I think being in tune, with their kids, are they hiding their phone from you, and being secretive, you know, always observing, always watching, which I wouldn't let my kids get away with anything. I think they used to think like, oh my gosh, my dad is on it, which is why I was an awesome foster parent. But also with the guys, just that ability with the guys that I work with, it's shifted again more towards, yes, guys with incarceration, addiction, and so forth. They're like, how do you know this stuff? Wow. You never struggle with, and I'm open about it, I never struggled with substance abuse or alcoholism. I never went to jail, but I am so, I guess, yeah, that ability to be in tune, developing those skills are super important. So when it comes to our kids, yes, we gotta think outside of ourselves. If we are struggling in this time of COVID. And I went through a depression back in April, unexpectedly, depression and anxiety. saw my program have major setbacks, staff that was on it with me stepping away until today and kind of doing the program by myself, needing to rebuild again. If I went through some hard times as equipped as I thought, I think I am, I know I am, what about this little child that's in their development stage?
Right? Yeah.
Why are you hitting other kids, for example? Stop hitting, and then the parents hit the kid for hitting. Well, it's maybe more than that. They may be seeing it. Maybe that's what they were taught. And hypocrisy growing up was a thing that I remember from an early age. I hated that. I hated to see the adults in my life that I looked up to, you know, doing things, telling me not to do it, but and doing exactly what I'm getting beaten for or slapped for or consequented for, you know, what have you. So remembering those things and relating it to today, I also try to challenge parents and to say, you got to love in your kids. You got to love in your kids and be in tune to your kids and don't take a chance. You know, just don't take a chance. Nobody knew that I had thoughts of suicide.
Yes.
They saw me as a guy who had it together all the, you know, for, well, all, maybe most of the time.
Right.
And if I could hide that or not show that, there are many, especially kids, that, you know, maybe doing the same thing.
So you're mentioning some. Thank you, Kavika. You're sharing some really valuable points. Just to recap what you're sharing about paying attention to children that are around you, whether they are your own children or that you work with children in some form or, you know, around you in the community or their family members, is look for different aspects of how they're behaving.
Yes.
You shared about, are they uncomfortable being hugged or, you know, or just being held? You shared also about, are they hiding their phone a lot? Are they being secretive? Those are some real important things. And then you also shared, like, know that everyone's different. And also the way that we as adults were raised today, things are a bit different. And so you got to really understand that to apply things differently than the way maybe you were taught or were raised. And you mentioned some valuable kind of tests that to explore the kind of personality a person is. One was a color test and one was whether they're an introvert or an extrovert, or as well as the love languages. I was just curious. I'm sure the love languages and introvert, extrovert kind of tests, those are things people can Google online. Is also, you think, the colors test, you know, what people are kind of attracted to, is that something you think people can just easily Google online?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's important. That's important because you and I grew up with a lot of, I don't know if it's sayings is the right word. Yeah. What I mean is, for example, people believe, people may have heard and actually believe, oh, opposites attract. Hey, opposites may attract because that's somebody that you think is going to feel you, or you love those traits of those, the type of person that they are. But once the relationship starts and you become comfortable, your opposite could be your worst nightmare.
Yes,
it could be your worst nightmare, rather it's the colors or the introvert, ambivert is the middle areas, or even the love language. Not so much the love language, that gives great understanding, but, you know, real quickly, for example, the color test, the one that I use, blue represents the hearty, helpful people of the world. Everyone has all these four colors, but the emphasis or the importance to this to each person, if they're a high blue, for example, and I am, is heart, big heart, hearty people who, in a nutshell, who loves helping people. The gold is the organized people. They like structure. They believe in authority. Then there's the green, which is the analytical learner. You must give them information, details. If not, they may get turned off by that. You know, they're always on this quest to learn. And then you got the orange, who is the rebel. They're the what could be called creative or the authority challenges of the world. So again, knowing these traits and being okay with them, especially when you're involved with teaching and supporting other people, identify where you're at, understanding these personalities, and not everybody's the same, because it could be a combination of all three tests, right? And that makes it unique. And there are big, extensive tests that can help you define that as well. But with these three separate tests, I start to identify, because I want them to be their authentic self. And so the, if they're in a relationship and they're opposite in personality, then yeah, they got to understand that, because if not, it's going to be chaotic. It could be.
Yes.
Especially when you're struggling with your own challenges and your own deficiencies. Just knowledge and understanding is super important.
That is really, really helpful. So if you've just tuned in, you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio. And we can be heard on 90.9 FM in Hanalei, 91.9 island-wide, 92.7 in Moloa'a, and 88.9 in Oahu. And we are streaming live at kkcr.org. Coming up at the top of the hour is Health Talk with Dr. Donna Kaplan. I'm the host of this show, the Inside Out Show. I'm Carrie Valentine, and I'm blessed to have Kavika Matos with me today, who is the program supervisor for Kane Connections program on Maui, and he works through the Maui Family Support Services. Keep listening to the end of this conversation if you've been enjoying what we're sharing. We'll share about how you can get in contact with Kavika if you have other questions and things. As I want to just also pivot for a moment here onto foster parents, as again, this is Emotional Wellness Month, and celebrating that in October. And no matter how much you are attuned to your emotions, there's always things to be expanding on and learning and growing, and especially in the realm of foster parenting. And I was just curious, from your experience too, Kavika, are there emotional stages that children kind of go through while they're in foster care situations with foster parents? Have you noticed that at all? Like kind of like an arc or a journey that children usually go through in that experience?
Well, number one, I think similar to adults and the stages that we go through when we break up or end a relationship, we may go through sadness, we may go through anger, we may go through feeling lost. A number of these emotions is exactly what kids go through when there is separation, even when there's relief, though. Even when there's relief from really heavy abuse, kids may be going through this, through all these stages as well. So understanding that kids are just little human beings that maybe haven't developed the supports and skill level, maybe even going back to their from newborn to six-year-old during their early childhood development stages and ages of brain development. Maybe a lot, maybe experience for them was really bad. So there may be some setbacks, although there's always hope. In my belief system, there's always hope for people. But, again, educating yourself and understanding that not every kid is going to be the same. Not every kid can be the same way you've raised your own kids when you step into the foster system. And if the intent is financial, to do it for money, because that does happen, and you hear it from people saying, oh, they're doing it for the money. Whether that's true or not, if you're doing it for the money, the one thing I used to do and used to say when I was asked to share my experiences with other foster parents, because I fostered over 30 kids. Most of them were boys in and out of incarceration, ages 16, 17, 18 year olds. So I had the high end, the tough end.
Wow, that's a difficult age to be doing that. So, blessings to you, Kavika.
Thanks, man. It gave me the experience, and I didn't even see it with my second boy, who today at 27, 28 years old, he's an amazing man, but what we experienced this with him, ADHD and what looked like defiancy and misunderstanding, all of that, that experience with the boys, I thank God that that I had that experience because it taught me. It taught me different things. So anyway, going back to the fostering, though, the question about fostering, kids will bring out the best and the worst in you. I always would say that. Give us one tip.
Yeah.
I would say kids are gonna, the kids, especially when they've got challenges. Maybe like at the CWS level, where you know the big issue is the parents, right? The instability of the parents. But the kids that I also foster, a majority of them were therapeutic level, which means that the family just couldn't raise them. Could have been functional parents, but somehow the kids had lost their way, whether it's mental health, emotional health, or whatever. And so that's again a higher level. And that could be the best experience your kids go through, and could also be the worst experience your kids go through. So kids are different. And so, you know, my son who was older when we started fostering, I was running a group home program and shifted to be the foster parent of one of the foster parents of this group home. And then eventually went from two foster boys to up to five at one point. My son was a preteen, and through his preteen and early teen years, he struggled because a lot of these boys, they came from lockup. And so to fit in, I would watch, I would see that his identity was changing. He didn't want to be bullied by them, or he wanted to be accepted by them. By the same token, he wanted to be bullied by them. So he was a concern. My daughter was 7, 8 years old when it started. And I committed before she was into preteenhood or going into puberty and stuff that I was going to stop. I stuck to that and then ended after 5 years or 4 years because I knew it would impact her. And, you know, so being aware, looking at your family situation, don't do it for the money because you're going to think it's not worth it when times get hard. But give, and then also treat each kid like they're your own. Don't treat them, in my instance, my kids, they knew exactly what it was. Fairness. Based upon age also, but fairness was a priority. And they felt like I was super effective, sought out by different agencies because bottom line is I treated all our foster kids exactly like how I treated my own kids, my nieces and nephews. And that's what the Ohana system, the true Ohana system is like. So some of them wanted to stay with me for a long periods of time just because they had not experienced that.
I'm sure.
Right?
Yes. So a great takeaway that I'm hearing is to, if you are involved with fostering children, is the main element here I'm hearing is to treat them just like you would treat your own kids. And even if, you know, you're in a situation where maybe you don't even have kids, think about that. Imagine how you're treating them is this how you would want to treat your own child if you were there? And then even maybe a simpler question is how you are treating those foster kids. Is that the way you are treating them? Is that the way you would want to be treated?
Absolutely.
So I think that's a good like checkpoint in yourself to check yourself. How are you doing? And so this has been just a joy to talk with you here today, Kavika, and to touch upon the October's Emotional Wellness Month and kind of really supporting the folks here throughout the Hawaiian Islands of dealing with knowing that no matter what challenges you're going through, you're not alone. We're all experiencing these things, as Kavika was very candid to share about his own challenges and how he's been going through things. And I myself have gone through, challenges too. So know that it's something we're all going through, and especially in this pandemic. Don't expect to always be feeling the way you were feeling prior to this, that life is a bit different right now. We're kind of in a pressurized situation. So different feelings can be coming up and different challenges, and to seek out the help. There's lots of different resources out there for you to get help from, and on all the different islands. Kavika's on Maui and works with Maui Family Support Services. Before we finish, is there like an email address or things that if people wanted to contact you for further questions or things like that, they can reach out to you?
Kavika means David in Hawaiian, and that's actually my legal name. However, my agency uses Kavika. So it is K-A-W-I-K-A at our agency initials, mfss.org. So K like kite, A apple, W, I like India, K kite, A apple, at maryfranksamsam.org.
Yes, thank you. Mahalo nui, Kavika, and such a real pleasure and honor to have you on the show today, and also something Kavika is involved with as well as myself is the Kauai Men's Conference, which is happens on an annually basis. It's going to be coming up November 21st, a Saturday. We are intending, the Men's Conference is intending to do a live gathering, as well as we are preparing for a virtual event, as well as virtual information and tools prior to the event. So if this interests you, or particularly, if there's a man in your life that you feel can, be helped out by this kind of information, or it's a very powerful gathering that happens once a year, and I've been part of it for quite a number of years, and so many men speak about the takeaways that they get from the gathering is just, what an opportunity that they can be around other men and be heard about their challenges that they're going on in their life, whatever it's dealing with, whether it's the business side or personal side or financial or their emotional health. This is an opportunity for a lot of men that, to gather outside of, Super Bowl Sunday with other men kind of thing, to have this opportunity to let their guard down and be real. So again, if this interests you, please check out KauaiMensConference.com. That's KauaiMensConference.com. And the event's happening on Saturday, November 21st. So, mahalo nui loa, Kavika, for being part of this as well with, the Fatherhood Council throughout the state and being supported, throughout the state for this event to occur. So, I just really appreciate what you're doing out there in the world, and you are making a big difference. So, as I said, mahalo. And, if there's anything else you want to share before we finish up for today.
I just wanted to mahalo you, Carrie. I think you are somebody that can help reach a lot of people with someone with the right heart, and you're super knowledgeable. And what you had shared as you recapped about the men's conference, there is hope. There is hope for all men. We just got to be willing to learn and grow. And our actions is not always who we are, So looking at ourselves, learning about ourselves, and understanding where it comes from, which may be core beliefs, is just step out and know that somebody cares and somebody's there. And so thank you for having me on today. I really, really enjoyed this.
My total joy. It's been such a pleasure to talk with you, and a hui ho, my friend.
A hui ho. See you again.
Mahalo for listening to the show. I'll be back on the third Monday of the month of November, which will be November 17th at 4 p.m. Please put it on your calendar. If you have questions about this show or future show topics or basically anything you'd like to communicate with me about, and you can do that at insideouthost@gmail.com. That's insideouthost@gmail.com. Well, that wraps it up for tonight. For my show, I want to head out here with a wonderful musical friend of mine, Kenneth Makuakane, on a song called Love at First Sight, a recent Nahoku Hanohano Award winner. Be strong, be healthy, be happy, and go vote. Aloha and a hui hou.